Good evening. Before I begin, just to note, everyone, you can do with it what you will. We have a lot of pictures in the presentation tonight, and if you would like to see the pictures, you're going to be able to see them if you're closer to the front. So if you would like to take the opportunity before I actually begin to move up here closer to the front, please do that. There are a lot of pictures and even some videos, no sound or audio, but we do have a lot of things to show you tonight because we're going to be talking about the trip to Africa. And so I hope that this is going to be as encouraging to you as it was for me. I had a privilege of a lifetime. You know, this is the first time that I've been out of the United States since I've been here in 2001. Before that, I did have the privilege of going to Belize a couple of times. And that certainly was a unique experience. And it's always good to go somewhere where you can see and you can experience people who are hungering and thirsting for the Word of God. That's a great experience itself. And that's exactly what I saw in Africa. I saw people who were hungering and thirsting for the truth. And so tonight I'm going to be filling you in on what we did and the experience that we had, the results that we had. And of course there are many results that are yet to come. The fruit is yet to be harvested, right? But I will say some things that will kind of give you a perspective on what to kind of look forward to, hopefully, in the future. On Tuesday, July the 2nd, I met Brother Keith Sharp, Michelle Sharp, and Pam Lawrence, the wife of Brooks Lawrence, who is an elder at the Prince Street Church of Christ in Conway. Of course, Brother Sharp is an elder and the evangelist at Mountain Home, the Highway 5 congregation there. And we met at noon at Little Rock Airport, and we flew out on our journey to Kenya and Tanzania in Africa. 16 hours from the time we arrived at the airport, we finally arrived in London. 16 hours. Manny Ebong met us there. He is an evangelist, a preacher that Brother Sharp got to know in Nigeria back in the mid-1990s. And Brother Ebong is now preaching in London, and just a great individual, very encouraging and upbeat. And there you may see a picture of Manny. And we met and spent several hours because we had a six-hour layover there in London, and we ate lunch together. And there you even see a picture of my chips. That's what they call those things in London. We call them French fries, right? But that's chips and an omelet. And that's what I had in London. And I was glad that Manny was there because the London airport is the most confusing place I've ever been in my life. The place is absolutely huge. They had a literal subway that ran from gate to gate at London. And pretty confusing, but Manny helped us navigate all of that. It was a good thing he was there. Another 8 hours from London, we finally got on a plane and we traveled to Nairobi, and we arrived in Nairobi about 9 o'clock in the morning on July the 4th. So we left on July 2nd. We arrived at about 9 o'clock in Nairobi on July the 4th. And from Nairobi, we had a layover there. And by the way, customs in Nairobi was terrible, and so were the bathrooms. But we landed in Nairobi and flew from there to Kisumu, which is right on the shore of Victoria, Lake Victoria. And we were met there by Brother Henry Agutu. He picked us up. He is a faithful preacher who lives actually up here, Bungoma, somewhere up in here, and right on the border of Uganda. And he met us at Kisumu and drove us down to Kisii, Kenya. And Kisii, Kenya is a large town. It's not modern, but it's large. But it took us about 2.5 hours to make that drive. It wasn't but about 45 miles. But it takes a little longer to drive on African roads than it does if you were right on I-30. A little different. So that's a picture of Brother Agutu. And I tell you what, I think that Brother Keith Sharp has him pegged perfectly. He calls him Barnabas, and for good reason. The man was absolutely wonderful. He drove us. If I do have anything at all to pick on Henry about, the driving in Africa is something you've got to get used to. And it takes a lot of time, a lot more time than I actually had to get used to it. He was scaring me to death. We pulled out of the airport in Kissimmee, and we pull out, and the first thing we see is a cow standing in the middle of the road. And we saw a whole lot of other cows in the middle of the road on the way between, and that's one of the reasons why it took us 2.5 hours to drive 45 miles. There were cows and goats and sheep everywhere, and people, and motorcycles and everything else. The road from Kissimmee to Kissimmee was paved for the most part, but every mile or so, you'd have these big old speed bumps. And I don't mean like we've got, you know, in your neighborhoods about that tall. I'm talking about they're about this tall. And they're about this wide. And if you hit them very fast, you will go airborne. And so they're not marked either. There are no street signs, road signs in Kenya. At least I didn't see any. No road signs. No directional signs. This way to Kissimmee, none of that. You have to know where you're going. there is no, well, let's see, what does the next road sign say? There are none. And there are no warnings that there are speed bumps coming either. And we hit a couple of those things that we did. My head hit the roof of the car once. We had on top some luggage. One of my pieces of luggage was on top. We had the back of his car completely packed with luggage. And then we had more on top. All that he had to tie it with was some inner tube or tire straps, and they were very breakable. And I was not comfortable with my luggage riding on top, strapped on with that rubber. It wasn't but three pieces. So I begged him, and finally he did stop and got some rope. And so I got up there and I tied that luggage down, and I don't care what kind of speed bump we hit, that luggage was not coming off that car. But we made the trip. It was about 2.5 hours, and we finally made it down to Kissimmee. And of course, there you kind of see what we saw as we're going through Africa. There, just shop after shop, little stores, and people everywhere. People trying to sell their products, their produce, everything, their goats, their whatever they had, and just people everywhere. That's something else I saw. You see that motorcycle? All those, I guess that's milk crates stacked on top of each other. You think that's bad? I saw one motorcycle that had four people on it, four adults. I saw another motorcycle with a guy with a goat under each arm. He was riding on the back. There were two people on the motorcycle, and the guy in the back had a goat under each arm. I also saw several couches on the back of motorcycles. And I never got a picture of a couch. I wish I had gotten that one. But there's no telling what you're going to see. It was amazing. Not only that, you know what else we saw? There, if you would like a coffin, there are coffins for sale right on the side of the road. That was kind of interesting. But we finally arrived at our safe house nearly 48 hours after we left Little Rock. 48 hours. On July 4th, in the afternoon, we finally arrived in Kissimmee. And there in Kissimmee, we stayed at a resort. It's called Yifanisi Resort. And the people there were absolutely marvelous. Now, for Kenyans, I will say this, it was probably luxurious. For Henry, it was luxurious. For us, it was like a regular motel. It was like a Hotel 6. not a nice fancy hotel, but just, you know, your regular hotel that you would stop in and stay at. So that's what it was like. In fact, you can kind of see a picture. They had singles, doubles, and triples. And we got a triple room for me and for Keith and for Henry to sleep on. And the bed was like this right here. And I lie not. It was just like this platform I'm standing on. Yeah, that's what it felt like, literally. Didn't get much rest on those beds, but it was nice. Listen, you're protected from the mosquitoes. You're protected from the crowd because it was a resort that when you got inside, you're safe. They had security and everything, and that was the most important thing. The shower was just one big room. You walked in the corner and you took a shower, and it was kind of warm, but not really. But you know, the water, don't drink the water. I did eat that fish. And I don't know if you can see that, but that is that was actually really good. That's the local fish there that they catch out of Lake Victoria. And it was just baked. It was really good. On Friday, July 5th, Simeon Sagwe, who preaches at the Koori Church of Christ, they're just north of Kisii, him and his wife Florence met us at the safe house. And we went over what our plans were going to be, what the church there had set up for us to teach. And the schedule and everything was set before, so we made the plans, and we took Friday just to kind of reacclimate to everything. We rested on Friday. We were tired. That 48 hours was a long 48 hours because from Atlanta to London, I got no sleep. From London to Nairobi, I got no sleep. And no sleep in those airports either. So me and Brother Sharp both were about 48 hours without any sleep at all. I think Michelle, she took a sleeping pill on the flight from London, from Atlanta to London, and she got a pretty good rest there, but none of the rest of us did. But we rested on Friday, and Saturday we began our classes. We drove about 45 minutes out into the bush to a village named Koori, and it's called the Koori Church of Christ. And Simeon had arranged for 20 plus men. 18 of these men identify as preachers of the gospel. They had all come in from various parts of Kenya, and they assembled. They came together at Simeon's house, and the church building is on his land. Now, these preachers were staying at Simeon's house. You put 20 plus men, plus their wives, plus Simeon and his family, in that one little bitty house, and you've got a cram-packed situation. And I don't know where they all slept. I'm sure some of them had to sleep outside. I don't know. But they were there. And they were set to study all week long. We began our studies with a Bible class that morning at 10 a.m. Both men and women assembled in the church building. And we had joint Bible classes that morning. I presented a lesson from Psalm 73. And then, of course, that's to encourage them to remain faithful regardless of what it appears like on the outside world. The wicked, it sometimes appears that they're doing just fine. But in all reality, they're on their way to doom. We need to be faithful regardless. And that's what Psalm 73 is all about. Asaph has a problem. He begins by expressing his trust in the Lord. But then as he goes on, he begins to look around and he questions everything that's going on. It just ain't fair, right? It's not right for these people to be prospering. And I'm being faithful and I'm suffering. Lord, this isn't right. But then at the end, he drives the point home. They're going to be condemned. I'm going to be saved. That makes it all worth it. So Asaph in Psalm 73, I thought was a good lesson because of some things that we had talked about with Simeon on Friday. At 11 a.m., and by the way, I'll share some other reasons why I think that was very appropriate in just a moment. 11 a.m., we had a worship service. Since we missed Wednesday night because we were on a plane, scattered around a plane, we had a worship service at 11 a.m. for the entire church, and Brother Sharp preached a lesson on the New Testament being our pattern, and that was his emphasis throughout the week. We would break for lunch every day. We broke for lunch on Saturday. Then we came back and we had questions. But there you see pictures of what we had for lunch. We had either rice and beans or bananas and beans. And those bananas and beans, they did not taste like bananas. They tasted like potatoes. They really did. But they're bananas. But anyway, we had rice and beans one day, bananas and beans the next day, rice and beans the next day, bananas and beans the next day. That's what we had. Then we'd all come back for questions after lunch. And that was every day. Actually, every day, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we also had another one-hour class after lunch, and then we came back for questions, and we had a lot of questions, a lot of good questions. One question had to do with a real problem in Kenya. Now, you may not think it's that big of a deal. Here in America, it's not. But polygamy is a problem there. And one fellow even asked, can a man preach the gospel if he has more than one wife? And of course, the answer to that is absolutely not. You know, you only have one wife. That's all you're allowed to have according to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And by the way, our studies throughout the week helped drive that home, because I taught from the book of Ephesians all week. On Sunday, we assembled with the church, and I taught a lesson from Luke 6 on what it means to be a real disciple of Jesus Christ. Brother Sharp preached on the gospel of Jesus Christ from 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 18 and 19, and how the cross is the center of the gospel message. And anyway, Sunday was a good day. We just assembled. We worshiped together for 3 hours, and then we went ahead and went to our respective places of abode, and we got ready for the hard week of work ahead of us. On Monday, July 8th, we began our daily classes, and this continued all the way through Wednesday the 10th. We would meet at 10 a.m., and we emphasized the need to start on time. And good thing that everybody was staying there in the compound, because that equipped everybody to be there on time. But we started at 10 o'clock every morning. And Brother Sharp and I took turns teaching. I would teach an hour, he would teach an hour. I would teach an hour, he would teach an hour. And we did that Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. In fact, Tuesday, Brother Sharp taught his lessons from a chair. He was so tired, he had to sit down. He wasn't getting any sleep on those hard beds, and he just did not feel well, and he sat down and he taught. In fact, on Wednesday, I let him sit down and teach the first two lessons, and that way, as the day got warmer, I had the last two lessons and answered all the questions. But that's what Brother Sharp did, and there you see the men who have come together. This is the classes that we taught with the preachers there in Kenya. Outside, under the trees, Michelle and Pam taught the women. It started out with about 12, but by the end of the week, we had 17 ladies present for the classes. And most of these were preachers' wives. I taught through the book of Ephesians all week, and that kind of reinforced the points that Brother Sharp was trying to make. He was emphasizing the authority of the Scriptures, teaching lessons, exposing, you know, the era of institutionalism, the autonomy of the local church. He taught and emphasized that. And that's one of the things I got to emphasize in the book of Ephesians, was that God gets glory through the church. God does not get glory through human institutions. God did not establish human institutions whereby he would be glorified. He established the church by which to be glorified. And that was one of the emphases of the week. And Pam taught on the role of women in the home, and Michelle taught on the role of women in the church. And we got a lot of questions from the women also in relationship to those issues and topics. Henry Agutu and Kennedy Odongo served as our translators. Brother Agutu, our driver, he is an excellent translator. Brother Kennedy is also a very educated man. He lives south of Kisii, down on Lake Victoria on the south side, where it's really hot. Brother Kennedy Odongo was one of the men converted back in 2012 when Brother Sharp was there previously. We had 23 men attend the classes, 18, as I said, of which were preachers. By the end of our time in Kauri, there were 17 students in the women's classes. And these were, again, people from all over South and East West Kenya. When Brother Sharp last visited Kenya, he was not aware of any sound churches anywhere in Kenya. The institutional brethren were strong there. But the four men that you see, you've got Kennedy Odongo on this side right here. This is George. George is the one, he gave me and Denise a gift of some giraffes linked together. He's an amazing fellow himself. George Omolo. And this fellow here is Timothy. Brother Sharp called him 2 Timothy because there was another Kennedy that was there, but that's Timothy Odhiambo, and I've already been corresponding with him. He's asking a lot of questions by email. And this here is the preacher there in Koori, is Simeon. Simeon Segway. So those are the four men that Brother Sharp met when he was there in 2012. They were all going to a preacher training school operated by World Bible School. They learned that the World Bible School is a human institution. And they also resisted the control that institution was having over them and the churches in Kenya. And they learned the truth from Brother Sharp on institutional issues. And so they took a stand and said, you know, the institutionalism is wrong as far as churches being tied to these human institutions, supporting these human institutions, and using these human institutions to do the work that God gave the church to do. They took a stand on that. All four were expelled from the schools. All four were expelled. So now they have to rely on each other and, of course, and the best thing of all, the Bible itself. You know, one of the things that I tell young preachers when they start preaching, they say, well, what book should I read? This one. That's what you need to read. You need to read it. You need to reread it. You need to read it again. That's what you need to know. You've got to know the Bible. You've got to be able to put it together. That's true. And there's nothing wrong with getting help from men and other exterior resources. But you have to know that book. And a lot of things, listen, one of the things that's going on in some of these missionary preaching schools, they are not so much taught the Bible as they're simply taught kind of like the denominations do. They just instill certain things without explaining them, and they instill certain principles, and then they want to control everything. And as in the denominational world, these preaching schools, these seminaries, are what is actually controlling the church. That's happening. And that's what's happening with these World Bible School preaching schools as well. And they came to know it and understand it, and they broke away from it. But now, listen, just because of those four men did what they did back 4 years ago, now there are 18 faithful non-institutional churches of Christ in Southwest Kenya. 18! From 0 to 18 in 7 years. That's fruitful, isn't it? And none of them get regular American support. None of them have asked anyone for support. Because they've learned something. They've learned that when there is an exchange of money, there's also an expectation of control. Follow the money. We hear that all the time in politics, don't we, or other things. Follow the money. Well, when somebody, let's say in politics, when a donor gives a candidate some money, what does that donor expect? He expects favors. He expects that person to do what he wants them to do. Same thing is true, sadly, in the religious world. And so they learned that, and they are doing what they can to take care of themselves. Certainly there are times when the needs are greater than what they're able to bear. We need to be ready and able to help them. But the reality is none of these men are getting American support, nor are they seeking it. Now, if they were still in the institutional circles, they could get all the support they want. They could have their church buildings built. That's one of the other things that the World Bible School does. It raises money and builds church buildings for these people that they're teaching. And everything is taken care of. But guess who wants to control that church building and that church? Guess who wants to control it? So they've come to understand some principles, biblical principles. Well, we worked with them, and it was certainly a great blessing. They were very appreciative, and they learned a lot. We learned a lot, but it was time for us to pack up and take a two-day journey from Kisii, Kenya, down to Moshi, Tanzania. And on the 11th and 12th, we made that long drive. We stopped in Nairobi, or just south of Nairobi, at a log resort. It was a place that Henry and I looked up online, and it was up on top of a mountain, and it was really nice. It was a nice place to stay. It was about like you find Ifanisi, maybe just a little nicer. It's about $100 a night, American. And that, you know, how much does a motel room cost here in America? About $100 a night, a little more. So, it was nice by Kenyan standards. We stayed there that night, and then we got up the next morning and drove on to Tanzania, went through the border. That took about an hour and a half just going through the border. And one of the worst things about the entire trip was going through all of the security. Everywhere you went, you had to go through security. That was true in Little Rock. That was true in Atlanta. That was true in London. That was true in Nairobi. Had to go through it three times in Nairobi. I don't know why, but we did. And then on the way through the border, we had to do it, and on the way back through the border. But we made our way down to Moshi, which is at the foot of Mount Kilimanjaro. I was a little disappointed because the only view I got of Mount Kilimanjaro was when we were still many, many, many miles away. We saw a mountain come up, and I said, is that Mount Kilimanjaro? Well, apparently not, because when we got closer, we saw another mountain rising out beyond it, up above the clouds. And that was Mount Kilimanjaro. And the closer you got to Mount Kilimanjaro, the less you could see, because it was always covered in clouds. All you could see was the base of it. And we were right at the base of Mount Kilimanjaro, but you could not see it because of the cloud cover. But Timothy Massawi was a man who had contacted Brother Sharp 12 or 15 years ago. And he had began to read some of Keith's writings on his website, ChristIsTheWay.com, when Keith was still up in New York. And Brother Massawi had began to study some of that material, and he became a Christian, and he continued his study. He worshiped with a church there in Moshi that was started and supported by the Institutional Brethren, and there was a preacher there named Wilson. I guess I'll get to him in a moment, but Timothy, he's a 36-year-old lawyer, very young man. He's just getting started. He doesn't have a lot of money, but I guess according to Tanzania standards, he's pretty well off. That's his house right there. It's a little four-bedroom, small bedrooms, but four-bedroom house, and there was one bathroom. There was a shower with a door, and there was a toilet with a door. And you go in the shower room, you shut the door, you take off your clothes. You can't hang them on anything because there's nothing in there to hang them on. You just kind of have to drape them over the door handle or what best you can and take your cold, ice cold, freezing cold shower quickly and put your clothes back on and come back out, because when you open the door, you're back out in the house. So that was really fun. But you talk about a great young man, a great family. His wife, Agnes, kept us. They did have a helper, a teenage girl, stayed there and helped. But they provided us breakfast every morning, two dinners. They were just outstanding. Very impressed with this young man. They have two young sons, Ricky and Alexander. There you can see the picture of his family. That's Timothy and Agnes and the two boys. We were absolutely thrilled with what we found, because we really didn't know what we were walking into. We were told that we were going to be meeting with some preachers from this preaching school, and that was Timothy's intent, because he was wanting them to hear the truth. But by the time we got there, that had all kind of fallen through. However, we did get to meet with Wilson. Wilson is the gospel preacher there in Moshi. And starting on July 13th, we had Bible studies, and Wilson Matai had set all of these up. The first study, we went into this little compound with this woman whose husband had just died 2 days earlier, and she's there worship or they're studying the Bible with us, and most there were not Christians. And we then went from that little cubbyhole outside of that gate into another compound, where we studied with two Muslim women. Now, the sad note is that because we went in and studied with those Muslim women, we were not allowed to go back. People got upset about that. We were not allowed back. But we did get to study with them. And they heard the truth about Jesus Christ. And what they do with it is up to them. But they heard it. And we had that opportunity and we took advantage of it. We then continued our studies. There's a picture of Wilson Matai. He was a teacher at the missionary school there in Moshi. That was his job. I mentioned this him in the lesson this morning. That was his work. It's how he got his money to feed his family. He learns the truth and he stands up against institutionalism and they fire him. They don't study with him. They don't talk with him. They don't do anything but fire him. So he works it out to where he finds this school where him and other people can meet, and there 2/3 of the church that he was with left and came with him. They left the institutional church and now they're there meeting with Wilson and Timothy, serving and worshiping God in spirit and truth. This particular rented school, the foundational stone was laid by Muslims. So now that building that was first established by Muslims has a church of our Lord meeting in it. On Monday, July 15th, we accompanied Wilson again to some more personal Bible studies, all non-members, and we studied with the man who had his own self-described ministry. But he was open to study. We studied with him for 3 hours. And he was very interested in what we had to say. We talked about a lot of things. First, he had been influenced by the Seventh-day Adventist, but he came to see the truth on that. And he says, I don't see how I missed that. We studied on the Holy Spirit and how the Holy Spirit works through the Word. And he came to understand that. He's on his way, hopefully, to also becoming a part of the sound work there. He was very interested in studying. Wilson will continue to work with him. We studied the New Testament church and the differences between the law of Moses and the New Covenant. We then had a short study, about an hour and a half, with a man. His name was Albert Machiadi. He called together his friends and his family. And we all assembled there on his front porch. There were 22 people there, including some Muslims. They were all there. And we taught the gospel. He currently is in the Pentecostal church. And after we taught for a while, we began to ask questions and let him ask questions. And one of the questions is, well, why can't the church be called the Pentecostal church? And of course, the response was, well, number one, Pentecost didn't die for you. Pentecost did not purchase your soul. Pentecost did not shed its blood. Pentecost was a Jewish feast day. Pentecost was a day that the church began on, true enough, but nowhere is the church in the Bible called the Pentecostal church. It's called the Lord's church. And he's like, wow, you know, that makes sense. And he studied, and he was so happy. Him and his wife were just tickled to death to have us there. They fixed us tea, and before we left, it was just, you know, just a great experience to be there. And I think that that's another whole family that's going to be Christians, true Christians before long. Wilson is one of the best personal evangelists that I have ever met in my life. He had study after study after study after study lined up. He's studying with people and he's doing an excellent job. On Tuesday, July 16th, we accompanied him for some more studies. We were going to get ready later that evening. We were going to go back to the house and pack up and get ready to leave. After we went to Wilson's house, he was going to have us over for a Bible study and also to feed us. But we accompanied Wilson for a study that that involved 2 young men. There you see their picture there on the screen. And also a young lady. We talked about the church that Jesus built. Once again, we just talked what the Bible said about it. We went through the book of Acts. And by the time that we were done, Christopher, the young man in the red, decided to be baptized. And so we drove him down to the mountain stream, coming down out of Mount Kilimanjaro. And I tell you, that water was cold. And they found a spot there where it's deep enough to get in that wasn't in the fast-moving stream. It's about like the Buffalo River. The water was, you know, when it's high, the water's running really fast. So they found a little slow puddle that they could get him in, and they baptized him. And so that was really, really cool. That was a great way to end the trip and end our studies. But we see people there who are absolutely dedicated to finding the truth and following the truth and being only the church that the Lord Jesus Christ built, nothing else. That's all they cared about. And Wilson is a man that I've got all the confidence in the world that he is going to, I mean, he's taking a stand. He's lost his job. I mean, there's only up for this young man and his family. And so just a wonderful opportunity. That young congregation, that whole congregation is only 2 years old, two months old. They just come out of institutionalism, and they are taking a stand for the truth. So on Tuesday night, we were sent off with the brethren in Moshi giving us a feast. And the feast was, of course, goat. It was, they called, Timothy comes in the house, and I'm in there packing, and he says, "Come outside, I have something to show you." So we go outside. Timothy, by the way, is one of the only ones in the church there that speaks fluent English. All the rest of them, just Swahili. In Kenya, most of them understood English. And they couldn't speak it very well, but they understood it. In Kenya, in grade school, they're taught their tribal tongue. Then they are taught Swahili. Then their third language is English, and they teach them English. Every student, if they finish school, they have studied English. So, in fact, English is the official language in Kenya, but not so in Tanzania. And so we were called outside, and I walked out in that sweet little innocent goat standing there, and he was so cute. Pam walks out and she sees that goat. She says, "It's a goat." And yes, it's a goat. We're going to have a feast tonight. Well, her hand went over her mouth and she runs inside and she goes into the corner and she puts her hands over her ears. She did not want to hear what was going to happen. But that was our supper. And on Wednesday, July 17th, we got up early. Henry drove us back to Nairobi. And we were set to fly out Thursday night, and so we made sure that we got in town. We did not want to be out driving after dark. You don't want to be out after dark in Africa, anywhere. So we tried to always make sure that we had plenty of time to get where we're going, get settled in, and be safe for the night, and then do whatever it is we got to do the next day. So we got back to Nairobi. Got into a nice motel in downtown Nairobi. The worst thing about the whole trip, I've already alluded to it a little bit, the worst thing was the traffic. In Nairobi, it was a nightmare. You can have a heart attack riding in a vehicle in Nairobi. You can. It is very, 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 very stressful. They have roundabouts. And instead of stop lines, and like I said, they don't have any road signs. They don't have any police officers. They don't have anything. They just have streets. And they have cars. And they have the first one there is the one that gets the worm. You know, that's the way it is. And when you have a city of, I don't know how many millions of people. I think it's like 12 million people in Nairobi. 10 or 12 million people. All trying to go through that. That's what it seemed like anyway. All of them were trying to go through the same roundabout at the same time. And it was just absolutely a nightmare. I was just praying, "Get me, please, to the motel." And then I was praying, oh, please get me to the airport. And I've never been so happy in all my life as when we finally arrived at the airport on Thursday afternoon and set the fly out. That was the biggest relief I've ever felt. But I'm very encouraged by what I saw with the brethren and the growth in Kenya and the opportunity for more. The fields are white there. The people are hungry for the truth. They're teachable. That's the greatest thing. They're teachable. People here in America aren't that teachable. But these people are very, very teachable. And they listen, they study, they're smart. They're not dumb. They're smart people. And so all you have to do is give them the tools to study, to learn. Henry Ogutu is a mature, faithful preacher, and just being around him for the almost 3 weeks that I was, it's very apparent that this man is capable of leading. And he can teach the preachers who were there to a great extent. The biggest problem with Henry is his finances are very, very limited. That's the case with all these people in Kenya and Tanzania. Their finances are very limited. They have a lot of sickness. When I got home, I got an email from him. His son had contracted malaria. His wife has been having all kinds of health issues, including malaria and kidney issues and heart issues and all kinds of things that she's been battling for the last 6 months. And so he's drained financially, but he is the man who can do so much there because of his maturity. He studied for 3 years under the late Alan Turner and is grounded steadfastly in the truth. And we could not have done what we did had it not been for Henry Ogutu. I do think, as I said earlier, Brother Sharp has labeled him correctly. He is like a Barnabas. He is self-sacrificial. He is giving himself to others and helping them, regardless of the personal cost, to himself. So, very encouraged by the things that I saw and experienced. Could not be more encouraged, as a matter of fact. We were so thrilled when we got to Moshi and find out what we did. I think that location is set to explode. They just need some guidance. They need some help. Not financially, by the way, but help, encouragement, teaching. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 28 and verse 19, "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." I remember Brother Lowell Blassingame. Now, Brother Blassingame made many trips to Africa. He's the one that first took Keith Sharp back in, I think it was 1992. And I remember Lowell telling me one time, he said, that passage says, I am with you always. Lo, airplanes go high. And he did not like airplanes. He did it, but he did not like them at all. Brother Blassingame was one of those guys that you can't help but love him if you know him. And he was just a great mentor for me. And I remember when him and Albert Dabbs used to go to Nigeria. They got the work started there. Albert Dabbs and Lowell Blassingame got the work started in Nigeria. Now, the Lord's Church is the strongest, largest religious group in Nigeria. Those people are hungry. And Brother Lowell Blassingame says, the Lord says, I'm with you, though I am always with you. But he got on those planes anyway. And he went and he taught, and much everlasting good is done. And it is just a thrill and a pleasure and a blessing to be a part of it. And I want to thank you for helping in that effort. It's worthwhile. No telling how much fruit can be born. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. I want to thank Keith Sharp also for letting me in on it. So hopefully, and they're wanting me to come back, and I don't know. We'll see what the future holds. But that is an option. And I would love to if the Lord will. So Thank you very much. Maybe someone's here tonight who's never been baptized in the name of Christ for the remission of their sins. These brethren over there, these people are hungry for the truth, and they are willing and ready to obey the Lord. What about us? Are we submissive and humble enough to receive the teaching of Christ and do what He would have us to do in our lives? If we can help you in any way, won't you come while we stand?